Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Dave DeForest reporting. More than two dozen suspects have been arrested in Belgium, France, and Germany in connection with searches for terrorists. Lisa Bryant takes a look.
Speaking to reporters, French Interior Minister Bernard Cazeneuve briefly described the early morning arrests of a dozen people around Paris.
Les enquêteurs de la direction centrale.
He says France remains on high alert with more than 120,000 police and military personnel deployed around the country. The French arrests coincide with similar operations against suspected jihadists in Germany and Belgium. Those arrested around Paris Friday are suspected of having ties to French gunmen Saïd and Sherif Kouachi and Amedi Koulibaly, who killed 17 people in back-to-back attacks around Paris last week. Lisa Bryant, Paris.
U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry today paid tribute to the victims of last week's terrorist attacks in France. He called the shootings cowardly and despicable. Kerry spoke at a ceremony at the Paris City Hall after he laid wreaths at the sites of the shootings. One of those sites was near the offices of the satirical magazine Charlie Hebdo, where two gunmen killed 12 people in an attack. French President Francois Hollande today told a group of foreign ambassadors the world must form a firm and collective response to the terrorist attacks. Demonstrators took to the streets in cities across Pakistan today to protest the depiction of the Prophet Muhammad by the French satirical magazine Charlie Hebdo. In Karachi, several hundred demonstrators clashed with police outside the French consulate. The protesters were mostly students, most of them affiliated with the Islamist political party, Jamaat-e-Islami. This is VOA News. U.S. President Barack Obama and British Prime Minister David Cameron met today in Washington. Before the meetings, White House officials said Mr. Obama and Mr. Cameron would discuss a range of issues, including terrorism, Ebola, Russia's actions in Ukraine, and cybersecurity. Mr. Obama addressed the press at a joint appearance with the British Prime Minister.
Today, we continue to stand unequivocally, not only with our French friends and allies, but with also all of our partners who are dealing with this scourge. I know David joins me when I say that we will continue to do everything in our power to help France seek the justice that is needed, and that all our countries are working together seamlessly to prevent attacks and to defeat these terrorist networks.
Barack Obama. A convoy of Chadian trucks, tanks, and armored vehicles motored out of the capital today to help fight the Nigerian Islamist group Boko Haram. The convoy left the capital soon after Chad's parliament voted to send troops into nearby Cameroon, whose forces have fought repeatedly with the militants. Meanwhile, Reuters reports that West African leaders are considering forming a military force to battle Boko Haram. Ghana's president says a regional summit will be held next week to discuss the issue. The World Food Program reports more than 100,000 people displaced in Malawi by flooding. The AP reports the nation's vice president today put the death toll in the flooding at 48. Libya's warring factions say they want to continue United Nations-backed talks in Geneva next week. The talks are aimed at bringing an end to the conflict between two rival governments, but key representatives from one of those governments, the Islamist one, are not taking part. Guinea has announced all schools will reopen on Monday, following signs the Ebola epidemic in West Africa is beginning to wane. A Democratic Republic of Congo official says presidential elections scheduled for 2016 could be delayed a year. A government spokesman told French Radio Today the election could take place in 2016 or it could take place in 2017. The United States is planning to deploy more than 400 troops to train Syrian rebels to fight the Islamic State group. The training is expected to begin in March. U.S. Secretary of State Kerry met in Paris with his Iranian counterpart, Javad Zarif, today. They talked about Iran's nuclear program. State Department officials say they held talks for nearly an hour, but details were not released. The International Criminal Court is opening a preliminary probe into possible war crimes in Palestinian territories. The examination announced today will determine whether a full investigation is merited. On Wall Street, U.S. stock indexes moved up this afternoon. I'm Dave DeForest in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight...
Cameroon says Chad has agreed to send weapons and soldiers to help in the fight against the Nigerian terrorist group Boko Haram. Chad's offer comes after Cameroon President Paul Biya calls for international help to combat the Islamist militant group.
That's Smokey Edwin Kinzica reporting from Yaoundé. We'll have full details coming up. Also, the UN Special Representative for West Africa says regional leaders will meet Tuesday to discuss sending a multinational force to confront Boko Haram militants in Nigeria, while the UNHCR says it is very concerned about the return of hundreds of refugees from Niger to Maiduguri. And ActionAid says for the first time since August 2014, the Ebola virus is on a decline in all of the districts of Sierra Leone. We'll have these stories, plus the sunny side of sports with Sunny Young, music from Liberia, and our daily features. So stay with us. There's lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story this hour, the UN Special Representative for West Africa says regional leaders will meet Tuesday in Niamey, Niger. They will discuss sending a multinational force to confront Boko Haram militants. Mohamed Ibn Chambas cautions, however, that an international effort can only be effective if all military assets are clearly identified. Boko Haram overran a multinational army base in Baga, Nigeria, several weeks after forces from Chad and Niger had withdrawn. Chambas says a new regional force must be better planned and have the blessing of the United Nations. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry has reported discussions with British Foreign Secretary David Hammond of a possible larger international initiative to confront Boko Haram. Kerry calls the armed sect one of the most evil and threatening terrorist entities on the planet today. Meanwhile, United Nations Refugee Agency says it is very concerned about the return of hundreds of refugees from Niger to Maiduguri, the capital of Borno State in Nigeria. The UNHCR is calling on authorities in both countries to halt this operation, which it says puts the refugees in the path of violence associated with militant group Boko Haram. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from UNHCR headquarters in Geneva.
The UN Refugee Agency reports hundreds of refugees were transported in 9 buses to Maiduguri on Wednesday in a joint operation organized by the governor of Borno State and the authorities in Niger. The UNHCR says another 11 buses currently are parked in the town of Gagamari in Niger's Diffa region, waiting to take back more refugees to Nigeria. Spokesman William Spindler tells VOA, his agency is trying to ascertain the nature of these returns. He says the UNHCR is very concerned because it does not know whether people are returning voluntarily or not.
Given the situation in Nigeria at the moment, any returns to Nigeria are of great concern to us, particularly since UNHCR was not informed of these returns and we have not been involved in them. But we don't know the details yet. We don't know how many people have gone back and whether they have gone back of their own free will or not.
By all accounts, security in Borno State is shaky at best. Spindler says the recent attacks by Boko Haram insurgents in the town of Baga show the extreme danger to the population. He says the UNHCR has asked authorities to stop the refugee returns until proper safeguards are in place. He adds it appears the returns have stopped for now. No one can access the Baga region, so information regarding deaths and the extent of destruction is scant. Some local officials have said up to 2,000 people died in the recent violence. That figure is disputed by the Nigerian government, which puts the death toll at 150. In any case, there is no dispute. Thousands of refugees have been fleeing the brutal conflict. Spindler says the refugees arriving in Niger and Chad tell harrowing tales of killings and destruction.
A woman who ran away from Baga with her 5 children and her husband said she saw insurgents run over women and children with their cars, shoot at people, and use knives to cut their throats in the street. She estimated that hundreds had been killed in Baga. The terrified family managed to escape at night before reaching Maiduguri, from where they took a bus to Niger.
The UNHCR spokesman says people across the border into Niger are living in makeshift settlements where they are extremely vulnerable. He says aid workers are trying to move these people away from the dangerous border area to a camp further inland. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Thank you, Lisa. Cameroon says Chad has agreed to send weapons and soldiers to help in the fight against Boko Haram. Chad's offer comes after Cameroon President Paul Biya called for international help to combat the Islamist militant group. Moki Edwin Kinzika reports from Yaoundé.
Cameroon government spokesman Issa Chiruma Bakari says the agreement came after a series of meetings between Chad President Idriss Déby Itno, Cameroon President Paul Biya, and top military officials.
Je saisis cette occasion pour réitérer à l'intention de nos populations et de la communauté internationale tout entière.
He says the two heads of state are determined to defend and protect women, men, children, and their property. He called on all citizens to collaborate to stop the barbarism of Boko Haram. Chad announced Wednesday it was committed to supporting Cameroon, which has been plagued by increasing Boko Haram raids, attacks, and kidnappings along its border with Nigeria for several years. President Biya did not say when nor how many troops would be deployed in his announcement Thursday. But Cameroon military spokesman Colonel Didier Bajek says negotiations with Chad intensified after suspected Boko Haram fighters attacked Cameroonian villages from Lake Chad, which is shared by Nigeria, Cameroon, Chad, and Niger.
Nous avons fait face à une attaque d'envergure jamais égalée.
He says they have been facing Boko Haram fighters who changed strategy and were constantly attacking Cameroonian villages from Lake Chad, has been demonstrating some resilience and force, an indication that it is still receiving support. Cameroon has deployed thousands of troops to its northern border in response to the growing attacks. Earlier this week, the Cameroon military says it repelled an attempted attack on a military base in Kolofata and killed at least 143 suspected Boko Haram fighters. Last week, President Biya called for a coordinated international response to Boko Haram, which appears resilient in its five-year insurgency to take over northern Nigeria. The Boko Haram threat is likely to loom large at the AU summit meetings in Addis Ababa later this month. Moki Edwin Kinzika for VOA News, Yaoundé.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. At 14 minutes past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. The UN Special Representative for West Africa says regional leaders will meet Tuesday to discuss sending a multinational force to confront Boko Haram, while Cameroon says Chad agrees to send weapons and soldiers to help fight Boko Haram. And the UNHCR says it is very concerned about the return of hundreds of refugees from Niger to Maiduguri, the capital of Borno State in Nigeria. And for more on our stories and the latest updates 24/7, visit our website at www.voanews.com. Well, Guinea has announced all schools will be reopened on Monday as new cases of the West African Ebola epidemic begin to decline. Classes were suspended for months in Guinea and neighboring Liberia and Sierra Leone in an effort to stop transmission of the Ebola virus. On Wednesday, the World Health Organization said Guinea reported its lowest weekly total of new Ebola cases since the week ending August 17th. Similar declines were reported in Liberia and Sierra Leone. The WHO now says each of the countries has sufficient capacity to isolate and treat their patients. The UN's Ebola Response Chief, Dr. David Nabarro, says the latest figures are very good news, but cautioned the epidemic is not over. Nabarro warns that communities must change traditional healing rituals and funeral practices, which involve contact with body fluids and have led to thousands of deaths in the past. The latest WHO figures show Ebola has killed well over 8,400 people in West Africa out of more than 21,000 cases. While the International Humanitarian Aid Group, ActionAid, says for the first time since August 2014, the Ebola virus is on a decline in all of the districts of Sierra Leone. It's one of the three countries hardest hit by the outbreak. Earlier this week, the World Health Organization reported that Sierra Leone, along with neighboring Guinea and Liberia, have reported the lowest weekly total of new cases. The Associated Press reported the death of a male nurse on Tuesday who was working for the International Red Cross in Freetown. ActionAid at the time of this interview has not confirmed the death. Mohamed Silla is the country director for ActionAid in Freetown. He spoke with me about the encouraging figures for his country and what lies ahead.
For the first time, the situation on the ground is much, much better, and there is high sense of optimism. The numbers are gradually going down. Yesterday, for instance, we recorded the lowest number of infections since August 2014. Which was a total of 16 new confirmed cases.
So this is really very positive news. And going forward, then, what needs to be done to really make sure the disease is contained?
What we need to do probably is still to continue more on the contact tracing, more effort on surveillance so that there is no relapse.
What has been the community response to your awareness campaigns? Apparently, people have begun to heed the warnings.
Definitely. That is what it means. People have decided to take to the warnings that they have been given, and they are not behaving positively. We may have some positive cases now. You have in one of our districts that has gone for over 50 days now without no new infection. We have other districts that have gone over 35 days now without no new infection. So it definitely shows that people are taking the good messages. Another thing I wanted to mention is when you talk about the way forward, we should not be complacent, is the fact that we had one district, which is Bon, that has recorded the lowest number of cases, that is just 5 cases, whereas the minimum in all other districts is over 100. Unfortunately, they just got one new case. This is a district that has the lowest, as I said, 5 cases only, compared to a minimum of 100 in all the other districts. And they have gone without any new case for over a month. And unfortunately, they've got one new infection. So it just shows the need that we need to strengthen more work around community surveillance, the issues around continuous mobilization to ensure that there is no relapse in the current positive gains we are recording.
Do you have any specific information on this person that contracted the Ebola virus? For instance, was it a health worker?
No, I didn't hear, but it's not a health worker. It's one community person. And information is just filtering out now, late yesterday to today. So they have taken the sample to ascertain the positivity, but definitely we may get the full confirmation by the end of today whether the case is positive. It's showing all signs and symptoms of Ebola in a district called Bont District. It's an island district.
Are people now going to health centers? I know the last time that we talked, there was still a fear of contracting the Ebola virus from healthcare workers. So do people feel more comfortable and more trusting in going to health centers when they suspect that they might have Ebola?
It is changing gradually. I mean, with the support of ActionAid and other NGOs, more support is now being given to the hospitals who are dealing with non-Ebola cases, and people are now gradually gaining the confidence to go back to government hospitals.
Looking ahead in just the next few months, what do you anticipate regarding new cases of Ebola? Do you think it will be contained and ultimately eradicated in all of the districts?
Maybe in the next 2, 3 months, 4 months maximum, I'm positive that we'll be able to contain the virus. Another new initiative I wanted to talk about, which has been introduced, is what we call Ebola Community Care Centers. These are centers that are built at community level, wherein people who are suspected of being sick are encouraged to come and do tests, and they will be well taken care of, just as a way of preventing people from keeping the sick at home. And the good advantage of this process is that 60% of all the workers in the center are recruited from the communities, the local authorities, the municipal who will serve us. Even the food is cooked within the community. Sensitization staff are taken from the community. So it has a lot of community ownership and gives people the confidence to, not to keep a sick person in your house, but to go to the center within your community where they can be tested. And if they are positive, they are then transferred to a holding center or a treatment center. And luckily, ActionAid is also managing two of those centers in the Western area. Each of them have 24-bed capacity. So that's an additional like 48-bed capacity that we are managing to keep suspects within the communities so as to break the chain of transmission within families. That's helped a lot.
That was Mohamed Silla, Country Director for ActionAid. He spoke with me from Freetown, Sierra Leone. A rights group says ongoing testimony in Chad confirms that torture was widely used during the rule of Hissein Habre from 1982 to 1990. 21 former security agents are on trial. So far, about 50 people have testified against them. VOA's Joe DiCapua reports.
The former security agents are charged with murder, torture, kidnapping, arbitrary detention, and assault and battery. Their trial began November 14th, but was suspended a week later due to a lawyer strike. It resumed on December 23rd and is expected to end later this month. Human Rights Watch counsel Reed Brody is in the capital N'Djamena and has attended many of the court sessions. He describes the trial as Chad's rendezvous with history.
For the first time after 24 years, the abuses of the Hissène Habré government are being presented in court for all to hear, for Chadian people to watch, for the victims finally to get their day in court and talk about the abuses that happened so long ago.
Brody says victims or their families have been trying for over 20 years to get justice. The Chadian government took action only after Habré, who had fled to Senegal, was arrested there and indicted in 2013. His trial could begin in May. Brody says the 21 defendants, including those who were in charge, are just a few of those allegedly involved.
Of course, there are many people who are involved in Habré's political police, but the people who are on trial here are considered to be 21 of the most important agents among those who are still alive. Just 2 years ago, many of these people were still government officials and security officials in the new government that replaced Habré.
The courtroom is filled every day with spectators who want to hear the testimony. Brody says there was a dramatic moment Wednesday when a video was played.
The court showed a video of mass graves in the inside of Habré's prison, emaciated prisoners being released after Habré's fall. People were crying. It was quite amazing to see this. You had the accused who were forced to sit there and watch it, and you had the public, and you had many widows crying. And some of this then was played on national television as well.
While Habré has been accused of targeting certain ethnic groups, Brody says it goes well beyond that.
People here say that there's not a family that wasn't touched by the abuses of the Habré government. And so you see Christians and Muslims, you see people from the north and from the south, you see people from really all different ethnic groups who are presenting themselves to the court as victims.
Prior to the trial of the former security agents, Human Rights Watch had called the investigation hasty and lacking a solid record on each defendant. The trial is being conducted under French rules and is presided over by three professional judges and two lay jurors. All the accused have testified, but the trial is now in what's called the confrontation stage. That's when defendants face each other after giving contradictory testimony. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
Twenty-four minutes past the hour. This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. UN officials say they will continue negotiations between Libya's parallel governments and a handful of rival militias next week. Following the fall of Muammar Gaddafi, the oil-rich nation has been plunged into months of civil war by warring militias. Several political and military factions met for 2 days in Geneva this week to discuss the withdrawal of armed combatants from all cities. In a statement issued today, the UN said more militias are expected to join the Geneva negotiations next week. Islamist forces have occupied Tripoli for several months, forcing the internationally recognized government to run the country from the port of Tobruk. Islamists recently shelled oil facilities in eastern Libya. UN Special Envoy Bernardino Leon is seeking a ceasefire and creation of a unified government. Economic experts from across the African continent say this may be an exciting year for African economies, which could be ready to move out of their traditional roles and into new sectors. In Johannesburg, Africa's economic capital for now, VOA's Anita Powell reports on what 2015 may have in store.
It all comes down to oil. African nations have struggled for decades to go beyond their role as providers of basic raw materials, like oil, gas, minerals, and agricultural products. Their efforts have had mixed success. While nations like South Africa and Kenya have managed to diversify their economies, others, like Angola and Nigeria, are largely known to investors as energy sources. But then oil prices fell, and continue to fall. And while that trend is clearly alarming to those energy producers, economists say this might represent an opportunity for resource-poor African nations, which have struggled to be heard over the din in the resource-packed African market. Experts gathered this month in Johannesburg, still the continent's economic hub, home to Africa's strongest banking sector and the headquarters of many international mining giants, to discuss this new trend. Analyst Martin Davis says change is afoot.
Africa predominantly has been this commodity-driven economy where growth is aligned to commodity prices. We now see the headwinds of rapidly declining oil prices. What future does that hold out for continental growth, and what implications does that have for business? And I think arguably, is Africa then sort of rebalancing away from traditional commodity-driven growth to one that is more balanced, more consumer-driven, and new wealth, new value being created beyond the simplistic business model of non-beneficiated raw materials?
That move away from the simple export of raw materials, says analyst Gareth Newham, could also prompt wider improvements in governance and in society. After all, diversified economies spread wealth in more ways than one, and also add much-needed jobs to the economy. Newham is the head of Governance, Crime, and Justice Division at the Pretoria-based Institute of Security Studies.
So commodity-driven economic growth, where a very small portion of the population benefit, while we have very high levels of inequality and poverty, do lead to higher levels of instability, making it more difficult to pull together a stable environment for business. And so there's a very close connection between good governance and the possibilities and opportunities for business going forward, and the opposite when there is not stability.
Davis predicts a geographic move as well, from the traditional West African powerhouses to their East African competitors.
So I think we're going to start to see the interest of business, the interest of capital move away from what's traditionally been oil-propelled economies of West Africa, think Nigeria, think Angola, amongst others, to more sort of East Africa, which is more resource-poor, Kenya, Ethiopia, Tanzania. Yes, Tanzania is going to be a natural gas story going forward as well, and also Mozambique. So I think the center of gravity of interest will shift from West Africa increasingly to East.
Gas prices are expected to stay low for much of the year and will be closely watched by investors and consumers around the world. For many consumers, the low prices present a welcome opportunity to save money. But for African economies, low commodity prices might be a chance to grow in new directions. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
This is Africa News Tonight. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and it's 29 minutes past the hour on The Voice of America.
Celebrate celebrate the sounds of Africa today, yesterday, and tomorrow. That's our mission in your show, Music Time in Africa. Hello, I'm your host, Heather Maxwell. Join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC and discover the best Pan-African music in the world. We play it all right here, only the best on VOA Africa.
This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. Here's a brief recap of our top stories this hour. The UN Special Representative for West Africa says regional leaders will meet Tuesday to discuss sending a multinational force to confront Boko Haram militants in Nigeria, while Cameroon says Chad agrees to send weapons and soldiers to help fight Boko Haram. And the UNHCR says it is very concerned about the return of hundreds of refugees from Niger to Maiduguri, the capital of Borno State in Nigeria. Coming up, we'll have music from Liberia and our feature reports. I'm Kim Lewis, and we're live from Washington. This is Africa News Tonight on the VOA. Sports with Sunny is next. Of course, it's time now for the Sunny Side of Sports with Sunny Young. And happy Friday, Sunny.
Happy Friday to you, Kim.
Well, Sunny, I understand Nations Cup football fever is building.
Building and boiling over, yes. Kim. The 30th Africa Cup of Nations football tournament officially kicks off Saturday in Equatorial Guinea. The host country will play Congo Brazzaville in the opening match in the seaport city of Bata. And that will be followed by another Group A encounter, also in Bata, between Gabon and 2013 Nations Cup finalist Burkina Faso. On Sunday, the action will move inland to Ebebeyin, and Group B will be in the spotlight. 2012 Nations Cup champion Zambia is matched against the Democratic Republic of Congo, a two-time winner of the African Championship. And that will be followed by a fixture between 2004 Nations Cup winner Tunisia and the Blue Sharks from Cape Verde.
Voice of America!
I encourage our Voice of America listeners to stay updated with all the excitement of the 30th Nations Cup in Equatorial Guinea by tuning in the Sunny Side of Sports. The three-week competition will culminate February 8th with the crowning of a new Nations Cup champion in Bata. Equatorial Guinea has had only 9 weeks to prepare for staging the Nations Cup after Morocco dropped out because of Ebola fears. Our African football guru, David Legg, has been going group by group and taking a statistical look at the 16 competitors in the Nations Cup. This evening, David wraps things up with Group D.
Yes, Sonny, this one actually is also a group of death, but I think it's just been overshadowed in the media by Group C, a very tough group indeed. Let's start with Cameroon, 16 previous appearances, also champions four times, 84, 88, 2000, and 2002. 71 matches played, 37 wins, 20 draws, and 14 defeats. They are ranked 8th in Africa and 42nd in the world. Striker Vincent Aboubakar, who was outstanding in the qualifiers, is my key player. Their coach is Volker Fink from Germany, and they're known as the Indomitable Lions. Guinea have made 10 previous appearances. They came closest to snatching the title in 1976, when they finished runners-up behind Morocco. Their record, 11 wins, 12 draws, and 12 defeats. They're ranked 6th in Africa and 39th in the world. I chose midfielder Ibrahim Traore, who plays for Borussia Mönchengladbach in Germany, as their key player. Michel Dussier from France is their coach, and their nickname is the National Elephant. Talking of elephants, on to Ivory Coast. Previous appearances, 20. Best performance, champions way back in 1992. Their record, 36 wins, 19 draws, 26 defeats. They are ranked 3rd in Africa and 28th in the world. The key player, no question about this one, no doubt whatsoever. The midfielder, Yaya Toure, who's just won the fourth straight CAF Football of the Year title.
All right, let's stand up for the winner, ladies and gentlemen, winning it for a fourth year running. Yaya Toure, everybody.
First of all, I want to thank Allah for all this achievement, you know. I've been very blessed all this year, you know. As well, I want to thank the football fans, and as well, I want to thank the CAF with the president, and as well, all the guys, his committee as well. And the last, thank you to Africa.
The coach is Herb Renard from France. Now, he's the man who led Zambia to the title back there in 2012, and they're nicknamed the Elephants. And last, and certainly not least, the team that's finished third, Sonny, in the last two tournaments, Mali. We underestimate these guys at our peril. Their previous appearances are eight. Their closest to the title was in 1972 when they finished runners-up. In 40 matches, they've won 15, drawn 11, and lost 14. They're ranked 10th in Africa and 49th in the world. Their key player, undoubtedly, it's the Roma of Italy midfielder, Seydou Keita. The coach is Henri Kasperjak. He's a French citizen, but he was born in Poland. And their nickname is the Eagles. And that, Sonny, is a statistical wrap-up of the 16 contenders.
David, the Africa Cup of Nations originates in Sudan when the first tournament was held way back in 1957. So it does have a long history. And you've compiled some more historical facts.
VOA!
For our VOA football fans, why don't you give us some of them, David?
Yes, Annie, I've had a lot of requests, particularly from Nigeria, saying, you know, give us some facts about the Nations Cup. And what I've done, Sonny, is I've picked out five. And the first one, obviously, is about who have been the champions. And it's Egypt, who have been crowned champions a record seven times, followed by Cameroon and Ghana with four titles each. And, Sonny, the competition has been won by 14 of the 54 African Football Confederation member states. And of those 14, incidentally, nine of them will be in Equatorial Guinea. Now, who has scored the most goals in all the Cup of Nations tournaments? It's none other than the Cameroon striker Samuel Eto'o. He has scored 18 goals, and he's followed by an Ivory Coast star of yesteryear by the name of Laurent Poku with 14. And sadly, I have to say, the late Nigerian, Rashid Yekini, he scored 13 goals. He was one great striker. We salute him. Ndaya Mulamba from the Democratic Republic of Congo, he holds the record for the most goals in a single tournament. He scored nine in 1974 in Egypt when the DR Congo, who were then known as Zaire, won the title for the second time. What about the record winning margin for matches in the tournament? Well, it's shared by Ivory Coast, who've done it twice, and Guinea, and they've all won by five-goal margins. Ivory Coast, they trounced Ethiopia 6-1 in 1970, and Guinea 5-0 in 2008, and that was in the quarterfinal. But Guinea got some consolation 3 years ago when they overwhelmed debutants Botswana 6-1 in a group match. What about the coaches? Two of them, Hassan Shahata of Egypt and Charles Gamfi of Ghana, shared the record for the most titles with three each. Gamfi won his titles with the Black Stars in 63, 65, and 82. And Shahata went one better. He won them all in a row. He won in 2006, 2008, and 2010. And of the 29 previous host nations, 11 have won the competition. And the one who did most successfully at home were Egypt. They have, in fact, won in 59, 86, and 2006, and they came third in 1974. So when it comes to hosting the competition, Sonny, the Pharaohs of Egypt are leading the way.
David, it's time now for our first African football quiz question of 2015. And I'm just guessing that it might have some Nations Cup flavor to it.
We promised a Cup of Nations one, Sonny, and my hint last week was defense. And the question is, Sonny, which countries have won the Africa Cup of Nations? Which countries have won the Africa Cup of Nations without conceding any goals in the entire tournament? Now, that's got nothing to do with the qualifiers. It's just the final tournament. And we're going way back, Sonny, to 1957, to the first Africa Cup of Nations, right up to 2013 in South Africa, when Nigeria were crowned champions for the third time. So just to repeat that question again, which countries have won the Africa Cup of Nations title without conceding a single goal in the entire tournament? The deadline for entries will be the day after the Cup of Nations final, which is Monday, February the 9th. So in other words, you've got till midnight on Monday, February the 9th, to get your answers in. And then the following Monday, which is Monday, February the 16th, Sonny will announce the three lucky winners, and he will obviously tell you where to send your entries and give you details of the prizes.
Thank you, David. And now David and I will give our addresses where you can send your answers.
VOA! It's david.legge, and leg is spelled L-E-G-G-E, at AFP, that's Agence France Presse, .com. So I'll just repeat that one more time. It's david.legge, L-E-G-G-E, at AFP.com.
Well, I'd like to invite our VOA listeners to send me your comments. We appreciate the feedback here at Voice of America headquarters in Washington. You can send me email at sonny@voanews.com. Sonny is spelled S-O-N-N-Y. And pick up a pen or a pencil and a piece of paper. My full postal mailing address is The Sunny Side of Sports, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue Southwest, room 1613, Washington, D.C., 20237.
Voice of America, VOA, Washington.
I also encourage our VOA listeners to follow The Sunny Side of Sports on Facebook and Twitter. My Facebook address is facebook.com/VOA Sunny, and my Twitter handle is @VOA Sunny Sports. If you go to my Facebook page today, Friday, you'll see a delightful photo of Chuku Chuku, the official 2015 Nations Cup mascot. Chuku Chuku has both arms pointed upward with his hands in a number one gesture. Chuku Chuku has his left foot on an Adidas football. And I should also point out that Chuku Chuku has very long hair, and that hair is colored red, green, blue, and white, the same colors as Equatorial Guinea's national flag. Here's hoping the on-field action in Equatorial Guinea will shine brightly over any adversity the small country will face in staging the event. David Legge and other African football experts say this is shaping up as one of the most competitive Nations Cups in recent years. I'm sure a lot of teams have big hopes of lifting the trophy on February 8th in Bata. I'm VOA Sonny Young, and that's The Sunny Side of Sports. Have a good weekend, everyone. Nations Cup fever. Back to Kim Lewis.
All right. Yes, Sonny. Thank you. And listen to The Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 1631 UTC and 1831 UTC. And today, Sonny has an expanded half-hour edition of The Sunny Side of Sports at 1730 hours UTC right here on The Voice of America. Well, coming up, the most popular baby names right now on the continent, and the trial of nine Ethiopian journalists known as the Zone 9 bloggers continues in Addis Ababa. First, let's listen to a little music. Here's L.I.B. Queen of Liberia with Sweet Africa.
together, be strong.
LIB Queen of Liberia with Sweet Africa. Well, Move Over Noah and Sophia, Love Mora and Abissang are gaining on you as Africa bears down for a massive baby boom. Baby names are getting a lot more interesting. Parents across Africa are drawing from a rich culture, long history, and an imagination for names for their bundles of joy. From the apple-cheeked Sundays of Nigeria to the roly-poly Alamayehus of Ethiopia to the cute-as-a-button Perseverances of Zimbabwe. VOA's Anita Powell takes a look at some of the continent's more popular and fun names.
Mohammed Khan has a front-row seat to Africa's baby boom. The 20-year-old man has a stall at a popular Johannesburg mall, where he sells framed certificates printed with poetic descriptions of common names. New parents are his best customers, and through them, he has gained insight into the names of Africa's next generation, as the continent prepares for a massive population boom in the next 35 years.
Some of the most common names we get is Eli. Eli Muhammad, Yusuf, Ibrahim, also Dineo is quite in Uratile. So a whole lot of, very common names that come up.
Khan proudly notes that his given name, Muhammad, and its many variations, is the most popular boy's name in many different countries, including Mali and Britain. Most African nations don't release reliable statistics on baby names like the U.S. Social Security Administration does. Those annual lists of America's most popular names give great insight into the nation's psyche. Classics like Noah and Sophia took the two top spots in 2013. American names seem to increasingly reflect popular culture. The popular website Baby Center gives inspirations as varied as popular TV shows, celebrity culture, great-grandmothers, and exotic destinations, like the newly popular Kenya for girls in the United States. By contrast, Khan says he sees African parents reaching for meaningful names that stand the test of time. He says he rarely sees the trendy, quirky names that have become so popular with top celebrities.
No. We hardly get that. But we do get, like weird names. I think someone came with Apple. Someone did come with Apple.
In South Africa, parents say they are trying to shed the nation's racist past, where many South Africans of a certain age were given an African name and a westernized, so-called Christian name. That included the late President Nelson Mandela, whose real first name, Rolihlahla, translates roughly to troublemaker. A teacher gave him the name Nelson on his first day of school. First-time mother Zanella is one of many new parents who have jettisoned that tradition. When her son was born a year ago, she named him Klanipo, which means wise in Zulu.
I feel that he doesn't have to have a Christian name. He can have a Zulu name and just keep the only name that he has. Because we are Zulu after all, so.
Proud Papa Doki Mate named his first son Karabo, which means answer from God in the Southern Sotho language.
But like the new generation, we're trying to bring back that African, more of an African name that you know what it means. Than our parents were forced to give us names that are English and they don't know what they mean.
But English names are holding strong in proudly English-speaking Zimbabwe, home of delightfully descriptive and self-explanatory names like Lovemore, Blessing, Bright, and Precious. And in some West African nations, like Ghana and Nigeria, parents name babies for the day of the week they were born. But U.S. popular culture is also spreading across the continent. 28-year-old Lindsay says she went for one of the top American boys' names, Aiden, for her firstborn. But, in true African fashion, she packed it with meaning.
I like the meaning of it. The meaning is fire. And his middle name is Dominic, D-O-M-I-N-C-K, and that means belonging to God. So in full, his name means fire belonging to God.
But old traditions continue to rule in other nations. Mozambique-born pastor Joaquim Livura chose to anoint his daughter with the Portuguese name Gabriela, which means angel.
In Mozambique, probably because of because of Portuguese culture, probably we do it European names, né? Not like here. Here they do national, like African names. I like it, the way that they do here in South Africa. Né?
These names and others are sure to keep entrepreneurs like Khan busy seeking meaning among names for the next generation. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
The trial of nine Ethiopian journalists known as the Zone 9 bloggers continues as a judge in Addis Ababa requests prosecutors to clarify four terrorism charges. These developments raise the likelihood that some charges may be dropped. The judge will rule on the charges by the end of January. Marta Vanderwerf reports from Addis Ababa.
The six members of the bloggers collective Zone 9 and three affiliated journalists were imprisoned in April, accused of using social media to incite violence in Ethiopia. They were charged under Ethiopia's anti-terrorism law in July. Amha Mekonnen is the lawyer for eight of the nine defendants. He says if the prosecution does not properly amend the charges at the next hearing, the judges will exclude those charges, one of which is related to digital training the defendants allegedly received.
This is the last chance given to the prosecution. The court is accepting our request. If next time the prosecution is not able to make clear or amend the charge as per the order of the court, these four ingredients or elements will be excluded, will be cancelled from the statement of the charge.
The court Monday accepted other charges, that the defendants formed a clandestine organization, incited, attempted and organized damage to the community, and planned terrorist acts as outlined in Ethiopia's anti-terrorism proclamation. Lawyer Amaha says it would be good for the Zone 9 bloggers and journalists if the prosecution fails to amend the remaining charges.
It has got only six types of human behaviors that are regarded as terrorist acts, okay? So in order for one to be accused of plotting a terrorism act, it is compulsory to mention one or two of the terrorist acts listed under Article 3. They were not there, but when they amended, they introduced one act. The law itself is not clear in that kind. Yeah? Simply, if someone plots to cause damage to the community, it amounts to terrorism.
International human rights organizations have repeatedly criticized Ethiopia's anti-terrorism proclamation for its vagueness and its use as a tool to silence dissidents. A recent study of the Committee to Protect Journalists lists Ethiopia as one of the countries with the most imprisoned journalists. Ethiopia's government insists that those arrested are criminals and not journalists. This is the 15th adjournment in the trial against the Zone 9 bloggers and journalists. Marta van der Wolf for VOA News, Addis Ababa.
This is African News Tonight on the Voice of America on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz. Tune in to African News Tonight at 16 and 18 hours UTC, Monday through Friday. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. Up next is our VOA editorial. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at www.voaafrica.com. And on behalf of our African News Tonight producer, Kwame Ofori, and our engineer, Peter Hundley, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Raids and suicide attacks by Boko Haram terrorists have wreaked havoc in northeast Nigeria and border areas of Cameroon in recent weeks. The mounting death toll shows once again that the group has no regard for individual human life or the lives of Nigerians and their neighbors as a whole. The latest outrage came January 11th, when two suspected child bombers blew themselves up and killed three other people in a market in the town of Patiskum in Yobe State, a frequent target of the terror group. More than 20 people were reported wounded in the strike, which came a day after a bomb strapped to a girl said to be only 10 years old exploded in a busy marketplace in Maiduguri, killing at least 16 people and injuring more than 20. These, in turn, followed the deaths of perhaps hundreds in the northeast town of Baga, where Boko Haram fighters, not content with a killing spree, also burned down homes in 2 days of mindless violence after seizing control there. The United States condemns the recent escalation of attacks on civilians carried out by Boko Haram. We extend our sympathies to the loved ones of all victims of violence at the hands of Boko Haram. All those responsible for these recurring terrorist attacks must be held accountable. We are committed to working with Nigeria and its neighbors to end the scourge of Boko Haram, and we remain absolutely committed to helping the government meet its security needs. We urge Nigeria and its neighbors to take all possible steps to address the urgent threat of Boko Haram. That said, even in the face of these horrifying attacks, terrorist organizations like Boko Haram must not distract Nigeria from carrying out credible and peaceful elections that reflect the will of the Nigerian people.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, www.voanews.com/editorials.
With your ears on Music Time in Africa, your connection to the best Pan-African music. Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, inviting you to join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC. Every show brings you the best music from across the continent. Old songs you know and love, and new songs to discover. You'll meet artists, too. Listen to Africa's superstars and rising stars in exclusive, unplugged interviews on the radio or on my YouTube channel. Search for Heather Maxwell, Music Time in Africa. We play only the best right here on VOA Africa.
This is a public service announcement from VOA Africa. U.S. President Barack Obama addressing the Ebola crisis.
Hello. I want to take a few moments to speak directly to you, the people of West Africa. On behalf of the American people, I want you to know that our prayers are with those of you who have lost loved ones during this terrible outbreak of Ebola. Along with our partners around the world, the United States is working with your governments to help stop this disease. Stopping this disease won't be easy, but we know how to do it. Together, we can treat those who are sick with respect and dignity. We can save lives, and our countries can work together to improve public health so this kind of outbreak doesn't happen again. In this urgent work, and in building a stronger and more prosperous Africa, you'll continue to have a partner in me and in the United States of America.
This was a public service announcement from VOA Africa.
Next on Straight Talk Africa, we honor the legacy of Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. with a look at the quest for human rights, justice, and dignity in Ferguson, Missouri, and around the world. That's next time on VOA Africa.
The Voice of America, VOA.